Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Ron Greer, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, hey, good evening, friends. Hey, thanks for tuning in tonight, and we're thankful that you are with us tonight on this week's edition of Raising Expectations, your show. And boy, we've got a great guest, as you well know. Tremendous people. All of you have been talking to me through this week. You've been looking forward to this show, and I'm so glad that you tuned in with us. And again, I invite you to put down comments if you want, and we'll check those out. We'll see how things go tonight. We just have a good time round a table with a wonderful friend. You know, we are born-again, blood-bought believers. We believe, and you know this, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, that he died on the cross for our sins, and that he's coming again. You want to look at that from any angle, we go straight through the Bible. And we're thankful we know whose we are, and he's coming again, and where we're going. But in the meantime, when we face things like we do in the world today, it's sure wonderful to know that it says in Psalm 119:89 that God's in control, and he knows what's going on, and he already has settled the plans forever in heaven. So we trust in that, and we move along, as it tells us, where Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, we lean not in our own understanding, but we learn all we can so that we can listen to what he says and have a broad view of what's happening. Tonight, we've got a great show for you, as you well know. And we're going to start with, first of all, a quick praise on the West Coast. As you know, Dr. Paul Hall in Lompoc, California, has not been doing well. He's doing great tonight. He's back. He's feeling better. It's great to see Paul with just not right. When Paul's sick, we all feel bad. We've been praying for you, Paul. Feeling better tonight?
I do, a little bit.
Somewhat. You look like your handsome self. That's good. You're back. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. All right. We're sure glad you're here, brother.
Thanks. Glad. Good to be home.
Yeah, all right. And if we go across the nation, as you know, we have, pastor, our favorite pastor in the state of Texas there is Ron McKinney. And Ron is a counselor with Man in the Mirror. But Ron is, as you know, he works out of Florida there is with Man in the Mirror. And he's just a great pastor. He does just about everything. He's one of the most wonderful guys and knowledgeable men you'll ever meet in your life. But most of all, he loves the Lord. He just cares about people. He's great to be around and fun to be with. So he's on an anniversary date tonight, yes, with his bride after 45 years. And Stephanie's nodding her head. So it's pretty exciting. So Ron and Roz, as you when you get back tonight or when you tune in later, we wish you a happy anniversary, and we wish you had a great dinner. I hope all is going really great there in McKinney, Texas. So good to have you on an anniversary tonight. That's a special deal. Now, if we keep going across the country, we get to Dalton, Georgia, in the northeast or west, I guess, corner of Georgia by the Atlantic there. See how quick I am. Where's the coffee, Steph?
I was going to say, I don't know what ocean we're
in. I'm on Pacific Standard Time. I don't know what my problem is. You're three. There you go.
I do have my coffee because, 9 o'clock over here.
It's just got water. I got cheated here. It doesn't work. But anyway, Steph and Dr. Steph and Craig Thayer, and they are two of the most wonderful people, one of the most special couples you ever meet. There they are, Steph on the left, Craig on the right. You guessed that already. There won't be a test. Don't worry. And in any event, just so you know, she is a tremendous health and wellness coach. She's known all across the nation for what she does. And she's even known more, I think, for the heart that helps her to do what she does. She's a godly woman who helps women now with her website, which is called Live Your Life Out Loud. And it's really exciting because when women check in there and bring situations in their lives, she shares with them in-depth help and things that they can do to encourage themselves and helps them to find out what those answers are by growing on their own. She has a great website. You want to check it out. I have a daughter in Ohio, a mother of four, and she just she really enjoys this page also and loves watching what Steph does and has to say each and every week there. And you find it every day. She'll have something special for you. Live Life Out Loud. It's there for you all to read. And her husband, who won't be with us tonight, but he is, as you know, a surgeon, a trauma surgeon, and he's a tremendous doctor who always lets you know. I love it how he says, I always take my hands and I get scrubbed up, ready to go. And I say, Lord, these are your hands. Let me use these as you guide them to hopefully save, restore, and bring about life that needs to take place now as I perform surgery. He's just awesome. And he also is an author. His book is called Saved. And you'll find his book on our website. There it is right now. And you see it there, Finding God in the Ordinary. And that's where God lives. I love how he shares his testimony that God is working, not in the big flash things that we can see everywhere, but in the everyday things of life. God's working where we sometimes least expect him. We say, oh, yes, Lord, you're there. He says, I've been here all along. You'll love reading the book, Saved, Finding God in the Ordinary by Dr. Craig Thayer, a trauma surgeon, true accounts of the miracles in his life. And I know you'll want a copy. Also, my book is there. You all know me. I'm Pastor Joe Schofield. My book, Legitimate Faith, that was set upon me by Zig Ziglar when he heard me preach this series. And it's called Producing Authentic Hope. And we know hope is a reality in God's word. And faith is something that gives us a legitimate faith, is something that looks to that reality and realizes that though we don't understand things, God does. Keep your eyes on him and keep your ears open. And as my uncle is saying, you know, pass the ammunition. That'll all work. Just be a part of the whole thing. So as we know there in Georgia with Steph and Craig and their family, they're wonderful, wonderful lives and examples. And I'm thankful. I know all of you are. You share it with me often that this is a part of this great team that you allowed us to be together, be a part of, and to bring things to you each week. And the things that you write, the way God's working in your life, and all of a sudden you never thought about this or that or the other, whether it's freedom, family, politics, finances, the different things that we talk about and cover with great guests. You shared with me how much it means to you, and that blesses us to know that. So God bless you, and we're glad that you tuned in tonight. So call your friends right now. You don't want to miss this. We've got a special guest tonight, someone that I have learned to respect in a very special way, and I'm simply going to share with you Dr. Jim Robbins, and he is back, and many of you had requested him. Jim Robbins, as we promised, he comes to us to share deep insights and firsthand knowledge in so many vital areas today. And I want you to know, the more we've got to know Jim, that he is a humble family man of faith and understanding, and who is highly respected as a writer, professor, national security expert with a strong public policy background. His specialties include politics, defense, international affairs, communication strategies, and military history. So much more could be said about Jim, including his warm and focused abilities when he's in discussions with people, revealing what I believe to be a deep maturity and a wealth of wisdom and knowledge that he's able to share because of his sensitivity when he teaches. All of us know that to do something like that needs to be empowered by prayer and to be received and understood by people who listen to you. People who know you're real when they listen to you learn when you have something great to share. Jim walks humbly and is used by God, and we are blessed, and I truly believe we're honored to have him on our program, Raising Expectations, tonight. So I want us to give the round of applause. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, I wrote it down tonight so I wouldn't forget. The round of applause. Jim, welcome to Raising Expectations. And we're so glad you're with us.
Oh, thanks, Joe. That was a very kind introduction. I'm turning red here, but I really appreciate it.
We're honored to have you, sir. you gave us some great topics to talk about, and I've been reading some of those things today, and I know maybe if you've got one you want to start with, we were just excited to see all of them. I sent them out to people and got responses back from all kinds of emails and texts that came back to me from people who follow our program. So if you've got one that you've really been hitting on, I'm going to give you take the wheel, and we'll just be excited to hear what you say and join in as you ask us. That's great.
Oh, sure. Well, something that I've been looking at a lot lately, given my background too, because my academic and professional background was in counterterrorism. That's what I did at the Defense Department, was teaching in courses in counterterrorism. And, for a while, people weren't really thinking so much about terrorism coming home. After 9/11, of course, everybody thought about it. But then for the last few years, it's been kind of quiet and we don't think much about that. And now all of a sudden, you have a lot of attention starting to be paid to the issue and the threat of terrorist attack. We had, for example, eight illegals from Tajikistan, which is in Central Asia. It kind of, just north of Afghanistan, were rounded up by federal agents in New York, Los Angeles, and Philadelphia. This was in the last month. They had come over the southern border, and again, you wonder, okay, so how did these eight guys from Tajikistan wind up in Mexico in the first place? That's an interesting question all by itself. But okay, so they came across the border and were suspected of planning some kind of terror attack. And a source told the New York Post that it looked like what happened at the Boston Marathon. Remember the bombing from 2013?
Pressure cookers, yeah.
Yeah. So that they, maybe they were, he said it might, it reminded them it could be something like that. So, now we don't know too much about these people who were rounded up because the FBI and the White House are not talking about it for some reason. I mean, I don't know why they're not talking about it. Maybe because they were illegals who turned out to be terrorists. Who knows?
Could be.
I mean, because I mean, seriously, in the past year or so, when people were sounding the alarm about, hey, maybe the southern border crisis isn't just about people coming in to, pick our crops or something, or work in unskilled labor positions, or whatever that rationale was. But maybe bad guys are using this as an opportunity to sneak in.
Absolutely.
And if you raise that issue, people would say, well, how dare you? These are just people looking for opportunities and so forth.
Idiots. Yeah.
Well, okay, fine. Now we're starting to find out that, yeah, some of these people who came in do not have our best interests at heart. There was another case that maybe you heard about at Quantico, Virginia,
Yes.
Crossroads of the Marine Corps Base Quantico. I used to work there when I taught for the Marines. And two guys showed up claiming to be Amazon delivery men, with a truck. They tried to get through the gate. The guards didn't think that they who were where they said they were. And so they just rushed through the gate and they were apprehended. They are Jordanians, allegedly. And again, when you say Jordanian, it is important to remember that a large portion of Jordan's population are also Palestinian. So it would be good to know, are these, because we have very good relations with the country of Jordan. And it would be odd to me that Jordanians would try to attack the United States. It would be less unusual, or probably more usual, that they might be Palestinians who are upset with U.S. support for Israel.
Yes.
But again, we don't know a lot about these characters that they apprehended because they're just not talking about it. Okay, fine. But there's another example.
Yes.
And just to round it out, in the last few weeks, we had the director of the FBI testify on Capitol Hill about the problem of the threat of terrorism being, since October 7th in Israel, now even in our country, he said the threat level, it's at a whole nother level. There's just so much terrorist activity out there and so much threat. And Director Ray drew attention to the southern border. Again, this isn't like Republicans or the Trump administration or former Trump officials or something like that talking about it. This is the current director of the FBI saying we have a problem on our southern border that's connected to terrorism. On the same day, in a separate hearing, Attorney General Merrick Garland also said the threat level was up and also identified the border as being part of the problem. Just today, we had the Secretary of Homeland Security saying we are facing an increased terror threat. And there have been other officials recently who've all said the same thing. And so this isn't just, you know, opposition figures or something, Republicans or people like that who want to criticize the Biden administration. These are central figures in U.S. national security currently in the Biden administration saying we have a problem with terrorism and it's coming across the border.
You think they're listening? It seems like America, the latest poll I saw, 62% or 63% were for taking all those people and sending them home, whereas only 38% were not in agreement with that to try to get rid of them. Of course, how are you going to find them if they never vetted them in the first place?
Right. One of the Quantico guys had been picked up and then released before the incident at Quantico. So
that makes sense. Jim, what I've heard you say to a couple times now, they're not talking about it. Is this under the umbrella in the guise of national security? I mean, is the population not trusted with the truth? Do they think we're stupid? I mean, what's going on? I mean, in your opinion and people you talk to, why the silence?
Well, there could be legitimate reasons, you know, operational security reasons to not talk about ongoing investigations. Mm-hmm. I mean, there certainly may be reasons, mm-hmm. but they're not even giving those types of reasons. They're just mm-hmm. not saying anything about it. Mm-hmm. And right. I think it's because they see it as a political embarrassment yes. to the White House rather than as a national security issue, which it really is. Mm-hmm. And when you have the top levels of government in mm-hmm. Homeland Security, the FBI and the Justice Department and elsewhere talking about this issue, and then we have actual incidents, mm-hmm. I think it's incumbent on the White House to let us know that they're watching this and they're trying to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same silence they use when they took to the streets in the college, all the Palestinian rah-rah. And everything when he's more worried about what is it, Wisconsin and Michigan and what's happening up there than to what we're doing with Israel and what's happening with these Palestinian leaders that come in these, they're not even students. But now there seems like they're finding many of them are students and they're wearing all these masks and things so they can't see them. There seems to be a big turn on that too. How do you feel about that kind of now that the companies have taken away jobs, now that many of the endowed people who have been endowing the universities are reneging on everything, and they seem to be coming stronger, or are we just hearing that it's a false narrative?
Well, with respect to that, and particularly with respect to the donors, and if there are any people who donate to higher education who are disaffected with the schools they've supported because it turns out those schools are not supporting the values that they thought that they were supporting, I want to let you know that the Institute of World Politics does support those values.
I know you mean.
Just to make the pitch, we're very interested. Some of these, you know, mega donors who aren't going to give money to Ivy League anymore, we are more than happy to help you out with that.
There you go. Amen.
It is in the charter of the Institute of World Politics school to teach American founding values and the Western moral tradition.
Amen.
And our curriculum reflects those values. So anybody out there who's a donor who wants to support a school where there is free speech, there's no cancel culture, there's none of that nonsense, and we do support the United States, and we support the Western tradition, the Judeo-Christian tradition of our country,
yes.
IWP is the place for you. Okay, there's my sales pitch.
We'll get them to you, too. We're going to put the address up, huh? We've got the picture and everything to go for you, but...
Well, iwp.edu is our website.
There you go. That'll do it. We'll keep putting that up. It's going to come on the screen a little bit here.
Well, but if I can address it more seriously, I think that the reason for these encampments and all the stuff that was going on. It wasn't targeted at the policymakers because, you know, the people in the White House don't care about this except as a political issue, but they're not going to change policy. And I don't even think it was aimed primarily at the schools. I think it was aimed at the students themselves, that this was a way that the radicals are trying to recruit the next generation of radicals by getting these impressionable young kids out there, getting them in these tent encampments, having these ceremonies where they're chanting all night and they're, you know, beating on drums and all that kind of thing, and then confronting the police, you know, kind of a propaganda of the deed to give them authenticity, like, you know, yeah, me and my brothers stood up against the, you know, fascist police or whatever. It's a way that these kind of mass movements inculcate their values into these impressionable young people and make them into radicals. So I think that was the real purpose of having these encampments. It was to get these students into the movement. And that's going to keep going, even though most of those encampments are closed down now because most of the schools have, you know, moved on into summer term. But we're going to see it again in the fall. Just you wait.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, sounds like the Stockholm syndrome, huh? Putting them all in a room and brainwash them for as long as they can. What's going to happen there? Stephanie, I know I could see your wheels turning up there. You got something you want
well,
to say?
Well, I just found it very interesting how different the response would be depending on the state, depending on public or private school. I wanted to laugh because one of you said masks. Oh, the irony of how many of these protesters are wearing masks. Like, if you're so proud of yourself, shouldn't you be showing who you are? You're such a coward is all I think, you know, when I see all of them out there with these masks on. So more commentary than anything. I also think that the protesters didn't expect some of the campuses to rise up in a very patriotic manner. And so I think that was a nice, unexpected result in some locations.
Yeah. Washington University, is that the one where they took care of the flag, the fraternity boys?
That was Chapel Hill. That's North
Chapel Hill. Okay. Mm-hmm. North
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was proud of them, too. I don't even know them. I was proud of them.
Yeah, they were fun.
Yeah. Next to you, is it George Washington University where they stayed camped out there for, what, Jim, a week or something, 7 days?
Oh, it was a long time. And it was interesting because first the campus didn't want to do anything about it. You know, the usual kind of thing, like let the kids express themselves. Then when they started defacing the, you know, George Washington statue and causing other damage on the campus, they had to call in the Metro Police, the DC Police. And the mayor intervened and said, no, we're not going to send the police because we don't think it would look good and it's not on public property. So we're not going to send them in. And this went on for a long time. And it was really interesting that the DC government wasn't helping out until finally they gave in and cleared them out.
That looks like January 6th all over.
It just shows the different cross currents of the politics of these things, where some police forces were more than happy to go in and take care of business like they did in Texas.
Yes.
You know, and then other places, they just wouldn't do it.
And you wonder how many people it takes to have them not move forward. It would seem like if you had a whole room full of board members or something, it should have been not just that we're all doing this, let's just all change. Instead, if they're not going to do what's right, there should have been some dissension to do what's right. But it didn't appear that way at all in New York City. And of course, by putting the mask on, like Steph said, somebody said today that they're just giving the district attorney in New York City something on the positive. She can get her face up in front of the camera again and try to change the law on masks. And you can't wear a mask now in New York, so I don't know. What's next, huh? But those have kind of all come together, I think, at the point of the terrorism that you were sharing with us, that they were in our backyard doing all that. Was that just kind of a to try to get all they could to get a world to let them think the United States was going to slow down and turn on their back on Israel somewhat. That failed. I don't know anybody, whether they're believers, whether they are nothing to do with Christianity or Judaism. None of them see what's going on and what's happening to Israel as fair or right, and they take a stand regularly with the flag that we're going to be the one that stands up. And then in Europe, too, and I'm not going to go into this, this is your specialty, but I'm excited to see what you think about that, with what has happened with Israel and all of this. Do you think, like many have been saying, that there would be some kind of a terrorist attack or an assault other than a small one? Nothing small when they take a life. I mean, two mothers just lost their lives in a week here. It's horrible. But do you think they would try to do some major thing like they did in the theater in Russia, maybe, before the election?
Oh, yeah. And incidentally, the guys who did that attack in Moscow were also from Tajikistan, like
yes.
The eight people rounded up here. And it could be that, you know, there was some connection that gave our intelligence agencies, who had been watching the guys here for a while, they'd been like surveilling them, they finally mm-hmm. decided to go, you know, round them up. It could have been connected to that attack. So yes, Europe is facing the same problems that we are in terms of terrorists infiltrating their societies. You see ISIS-K, the Afghanistan offshoot of ISIS, ISIS Khorasan, being very significantly involved in this. And in our country, that was, again, ISIS-K was connected to the people rounded up here. And now the threat that they're looking at is to the Summer Olympics in Paris. Earlier this year, the French authorities said there was absolutely no threat, not worry about it. You know, there wasn't going to be an attack and so forth. And then last month, they busted up two planning cells, ISIS-K, one of them, that were planning to attack the Olympics. So there have been other threats to like different football, as you know, soccer contests going on in different parts of Europe where they've had alerts. They had it in Britain. There was one in Belgium. Mm-hmm. And the Olympics are a great target, or any of these sporting events, for terrorists, because you have a lot of people there, so a lot of innocent people for them to kill in one place. Mm-hmm. And there's wall-to-wall TV coverage, so you make sure that your message gets out. And they can model it, if they want, on the 1972 Munich attack, you know, against the Israeli athletes.
Right.
The Palestinian terror group Black September,
yes.
Where, you know, it wound up that 11 coaches and athletes were killed, in part because of a bungled rescue attempt. But about a billion people saw that unfolding on TV. It was like 900 million people,
wow,
which was great for the terrorists, you know, to get their message out, even though most of them also died. So, you know, they have to watch out for the Olympics, because it's very difficult to secure all those venues. And you do have these active terrorist groups now in Europe planning the same kind of attacks that they're planning for the United States.
We have a guy that was on a few weeks ago. He's coming back again. Steve McCloskey was an Olympic winner for us back in my age, back in the late 60s and early 70s. And he's been Olympic running coach for the U.S. for how many years? Was he like 10 or 15 years in a row? And now he personally trains different ones. And he's in Oregon at all of our big Olympic stuff right now, training, picking certain guys and training them as a main Olympic coach. He's going to be there, so I guess he'll be there in Paris. We'll probably hear about that. It's not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood anymore. The world.
Gosh, it is in California, haven't you heard?
Yeah, right.
We're a great model for the rest of the world.
You We're know? Doing fine out here.
Yeah. I heard about your reparations for.
Jim, can I ask you? You were with us last August of 23, and you made a statement when you were with us. You said the world is waking up, okay? And you'd referenced China and, you know, some other situations. You think the world is still waking up? And if it is, what is it seeing? How there appears to be And I read an interesting article today. There appears to be some realignments going on, you know, with different countries and who is whose friend and et cetera, et cetera. But could you speak to that? What is the world waking up to now? It's a different situation, I think.
Yeah. Well, with respect to China, it's that the waking up that I referred to is that countries are understanding that China is in it for China. They're not they're not your friends. If they come to you with a great deal, it's probably to put you in debt to them. And, you know, things like that. You know, if they come to you with a brand new telecommunication system that's really cheap and everything and, you know, will solve all your problems, well, it's probably there to spy on you. You know, it will be embedded with the ways to spy on you. So that's what I meant about people starting to understand what China was up to. But with respect to the alignment, and I think you're probably referring to the BRICS nations, you know, BRICS, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. But many more countries have joined this BRICS. I don't think they're going to keep adding letters to it, like some movements, but I think they'll just stick with BRICS. But you'll notice that, for example, the BRICS countries have been pushing for a new international currency to conduct trade in and sort of topple the supremacy of the dollar. They are charting their own course diplomatically, because at the recent peace conference in Switzerland for the Ukraine war, where there was a statement released calling for, you know, peace in that part of the world, the BRICS countries didn't endorse it because Russia is one of the BRICS and they don't, you know, they're just trying to stay out of that conflict. They don't want to offend Russia. And so they weren't going to sign on to any kind of statement like that. And when you put Russia and China together with these other countries, and they've brought in some Middle Eastern countries too with their energy resources, and they're trying to bring in other countries from Southeast Asia and from South America, well, this is an alignment against the United States and the Western powers.
Yes.
And they're trying to set up an alternative global economy, an alternative, you know, global structure. And I can see it definitely challenging us, not, you know, a long time from now, but very soon.
Can you speak to some of the things that are going on? There seem to be some questions now about the European Union and NATO are kind of, those two organizations kind of start, you know, the butting heads. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Oh, sure. And that's actually been going on for a while. It's in particular France. They like to cause trouble on this. But in the EU, and the EU countries and the NATO countries, it's a very similar list, particularly when Britain was in EU. But the major outlier, of course, is the United States. And the Europeans, for some time, at least some Europeans, have thought, do they really need to have the United States to secure Europe, or can they just do it on their own? Why don't they just have a European Defense Force? And there is something called European Defense Force. It's not very powerful, but they have it. And periodically, when there's problems with NATO or the United States is seen as being a problem for some reason, they'll talk about this, like disconnecting the United States from the Atlantic Alliance and just having their own EU-based military and EU defense system.
Right.
And they can try if they want. It wouldn't be very smart of them, because why not have the United States on your side if we're willing to? It's not like, you know, what would they do differently if we weren't there? I don't know. And they're free to do what they want. But it will probably also cost them a lot more, because one of the problems that they have encountered when they try to do exercises and other things using the European Defense Force is the United States contributes most of the air power, most of the transport, and most of the naval, and most of the intelligence.
Right.
So if you want to have your armed force out there without those things, then go for it.
Yeah, really. That's a good point.
Do you think the way things line up over time, do you think that the EU, for example, is that some of the countries in the EU are kind of dabbling with losing their national sovereignty? And is that an important issue? You know, are they trying to gather under one big umbrella and say, you know, we'll surrender making defense decisions and finance decisions, we'll surrender that to Brussels or wherever, mm-hmm. you know, the head is. Do you see that happening? And, you know, should we be thinking about that?
Well, it was certainly important enough for the British to pull out of it.
Right.
You know, they had felt they'd given up enough sovereignty
right.
to the Eurocrats, and so they pulled out. And good thing that they could, you know, that they were allowed to do that. It wasn't like, you know, they secede and then they get attacked, but they, you know, were able to depart. And there have been movements in other countries in the EU talking about either withdrawing or limiting what types of decisions they would take from Brussels. It's not all unity behind the right. EU where everybody's, you know, all for one and one for all. There's a definite division. Mm-hmm. And I think each country looks at it from a standpoint of, what do I get out of this?
Yeah.
And to the extent they get something out of it, they're probably willing to put up with regulations or, you know, things that are meddlesome. To the extent they don't, or that they have more national pride, or they just want to be free of it, then they can take the Brexit route.
Right.
To Paul's question too, you know, up till the last, the 20th century, they were all imperial powers. And even though they were all related to each other, right? Everybody had cousins, everybody was related. They were still very proud of who they were, whether it was the Kaiser in Germany or whichever nation. So I think the union, they're working on all of that, but do you think maybe the elections that just happened where France, a lot of them spoke up and said, you know, we've had enough of this invasion of everybody. We want some of our classical culture and who we are back. We want to be remembered as who we are. I don't think they'll ever do away with that. Do you think? Or maybe they would, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the trend that we saw in that recent election where you had these nationalist parties yeah. gaining more seats. In part because of this influx of immigrants and folks that they'd rather not have there. Mm-hmm. And just to go on your point about 100 years ago, it's important to know where the EU came from. And it was in a method of trying to stop the next intra-European suicidal war. You know, we had two of them in the 20th century.
Yes.
It didn't work out for the European powers. And those empires that you mentioned fell because yes. they were worn out from fighting these wars, or they were defeated in war or taken over by the Bolsheviks in the case of Russia, or, you know, disintegrated in the case of Austro-Hungary. So the EU was seen as a way for Europeans to say, hey, how about we stop killing each other
yeah.
and kind of work together the way the United States do, you know, and have a more reasonable arrangement. That's how it all grew out. But then as the possibility of fratricidal conflict receded, they realized, hey, we've now got this overweening bureaucracy telling us what yes. to do.
There you go.
And now add in the immigrant issue and it becomes very explosive.
There you go. There you go. That's clear. Steph, Paul, you got another...
this will take the whole rest of the time. And there's lots of directions you can go with this, Jim, but we have an election coming up. What would you like to talk about related to that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting to watch, and there are various things that are baffling the experts. Like, I think many on the Democratic side believe that if Donald Trump was convicted of something, anything, that his support would collapse. There's no way anybody would vote for a felon, et cetera, you know, that sort of narrative. And that hasn't happened. If you look at the polls, Trump is either level with where he was or his margins have increased. So, I mean, that's just kind of interesting to note that people either don't care if he was convicted or they think the trial was just a sham, that it was the exploitation of the legal system for a political purpose, something like that.
Yes.
So that's one interesting thing. The other interesting development is the movement of some minority groups towards Trump, completely unpredicted by the democratic model of reality. They didn't think that this was possible. And now they're just denying that it's happening. You know, the Blacks for Trump movement or the legal Hispanics in this country, Latino population moving in larger numbers towards Trump. You know, that's not really predicted by the democratic model of reality, which is completely based on your ethnicity, right? And if you're of a certain ethnic group, you fit in a certain box and you need to stay in your box and vote Democratic. Well, that's not happening. So that's another thing that I've been watching with some interest. And the
Yes.
third thing, this is my favorite one because it hits where I live, is the fact that Virginia is now in play in the
It is.
Electoral College.
Oh.
And if you look, here's a little model. I want to write about this sometime soon, but here's a little model. You know, we all like to play the game of trying to add up to 270 electoral votes. And what if this state goes this way and that goes that way and whatever?
Yes.
Okay. So just take your 2020 election results and then give Georgia to Trump because last time was a fluke. He's going to get Georgia this time. Okay, so take 2020 plus Georgia. Well, then if you give Trump Nevada, which he didn't get last time, but according to a poll I just saw today, he's trending at like 18 points or something nuts,
Yeah.
you know, something crazy. Like you wouldn't expect it, but okay, fine, give him Nevada. Well, you know what? He only needs 11 more electoral votes with just that. And guess which state has 12?
Virginia.
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 Virginia. And so if that happened, I guess, you know, it's all math, right? But if that happened, here are the states Trump wouldn't have to win: Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan,
Oh.
Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, or Arizona. Wouldn't have to win any of those, and he would still
Wow.
win. So if Nevada flips and Virginia flips, that's it, game over. So
No, I
the
didn't
fact that
know.
Virginia is suddenly a tie when it's been voting Democrat since God knows when is just astonishing to people who haven't been following what's going on in my state. But if you look at the 2021 gubernatorial election that
It's
Governor Youngkin won,
sure
every
is.
single county and city in Virginia moved towards the Republicans. It doesn't mean they all voted Republican, but the percentages, every single one, everyone moved Republican. And in
Wow.
2022, again, Democrats did pretty well with the House elections and in the state House races, but overall, the numbers were still moving towards the Republicans. And so that drift has been going on for the last 3 years, and no one saw it coming. So all of a sudden, Virginia's a tie, and people are freaking out.
Oh
But
my
the
God.
Democrats should freak out because, like I said, Nevada and Virginia, that's the ball game. And all this other stuff about Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, all that,
Oh, that,
it
yeah.
won't even matter.
That's incredible. Didn't know that. That's amazing. You guys are,
Yeah.
that's amazing.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah, I didn't
Yeah.
realize that about Virginia. I knew Nevada. I was trying to look up the date. It's been a long time since they've voted Republican. So just that momentum is pretty impressive.
It's very impressive. And again, that's the like you have legal Latino immigrants who work out there and you know the different labor unions in Las Vegas who voted overwhelmingly for Biden, and now they see their jobs threatened
Yeah.
by all these people coming over the border, and so they're having a second thought.
And no tax on tips.
Oh, that was so brilliant.
Was that
That was
brilliant?
utterly brilliant. Trump is a master at that stuff.
He is. thought, wow, it takes it straight to Las Vegas. That's
Okay, so I
impressive.
have another question
Oh, go
related
ahead,
to the
Sam. Yeah,
election.
I'm sorry.
Do
Go ahead.
you think that they, and by they, I mean the Democrats, will keep Biden as the nominee, or do you think they'll try to do a switcheroo in August?
You know, that's a great question. I have friends who are absolutely convinced that they're going to make the switch. And it is certainly possible. I think that's why they have their convention so late. You know, I mean, it's pretty late historically.
Yeah.
And I
Only
think
3 months.
it's because they want to have all that time to think about it, I think. Because if they are going to make a switch, it would have to be at the convention. And Biden would have to, if he's cooperating with this, he would have to release all his delegates. Because as according to the rules right now, he will be the nominee unless he releases his delegates. So he would have to do that. And if he did do that, wow, it would really be interesting to see if it was a fair fight on the floor. You know, like old school, you know,
Wild.
politicking, backroom deals, all dark horse candidates, all that cool stuff, which would be fun to watch. Or if there is like a, you know, a coup essentially, where they switch Biden out for Newsom or somebody else. But if they do it that way with a deal behind the scenes, that's going to make some people pretty mad who might want to be president.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point, Jim. Yeah.
I'm so curious because I have in our notes from last time you were here, which you have a very good memory, by the way, because as soon as Paul brought that up, you knew BRICS, all of it. But we had talked about how the indictments just keep coming for Trump, and the Justice Department has been politicized. So we had a chat about that and how Biden's approval rating was down. So this is just, we're here
Down the
3 months
road.
later, and it's more
Yeah.
so of the same.
Yeah. And since October, Biden's ratings have gone even further down.
Yeah.
You know, he's not more popular for what he's done, and Trump is no more unpopular for being a convict.
Steph, if you got a thought on that, a quick question. We may have mentioned this. What about those, because of what Steph said, if they keep going down like they are, and we keep looking like we do, what about those submarines in Havana? You think that they're pushing everything as far as they can because they think that he won't step down and he is going to make a big, he's an easy pushover to try something again like Kennedy's time?
Well, I think that Putin is just, he's
Same
trying to
game.
do a show of force just because he can. It's not, what's he going to do with his ships? He going to attack us? I mean, they're easier to sink where they are right now. You know, they're right close. We don't have to go far to get them. So I think it's just kind of a show the flag thing, and he's showing he can project power towards us the way that we've been like sending stuff to Ukraine. I don't think we should be all that concerned about it because we're tracking what they're doing, and I'm sure they're under total surveillance
There you
to the
go.
extent we
Okay.
can do that. But I will say this, and I've said this for a number of years, someday a Chinese fleet is going to show up in the port of, you know, in Cuba. And that will be significant because Chinese Navy hasn't really projected power like that, like the Great White Fleet with Teddy
Yes,
Roosevelt. You know, we went
Roosevelt,
around the
yeah.
world and it was like our emergence on the world stage.
Yes.
China's going to do something like that pretty soon, I bet.
Yeah.
And it's going to be noteworthy. Again, it won't mean an attack, but it will be significant.
Gonna change maybe world opinion some. Jim, boy, we sure appreciate you. Steph, did you catch your breath? We got to do a quick commercial, then we're gonna have you share one. This is great. Yes.
We always run out of time here, but we're so
Yeah,
grateful that you all come to listen in, whether it's live or to the recordings. And we just want to share how you can stay connected and get all the resources. So you can go to the website, bbsradio.com/raising expectations. And there we are. And at the top, there's different ways that you can donate. It actually takes money to be on the air and to get on all the platforms. And so we really appreciate however you can help us. And when you scroll down a little bit, you'll see at the top there, Pastor Joe even has a way to directly contact him if you'd like to do snail mail or some other way. I know not everybody likes the technology donation stuff. And then if you keep going, there are past shows. You can listen to all the recordings we have. You can find your favorite guests and just skip to those if you want. And then you can learn about each one of us as co-hosts and connect with us directly and just learn a little bit more about each one of us. So that's what there is. Oh, and then books. There's Pastor Joe's. There's my husband. So lots and lots of goodies in there.
Yeah, it's bpsradio.com/raising expectations. Lisa got that one. I had to write the round of applause, Steph. I had to write that one. Yeah, that's it. Never get that one right, Jim. You get a brain freeze on one. But yeah, bpsradio.com/raising expectations. Folks, we appreciate all you can do on that. Jim, we've only got about 3 minutes. Share a little how our audience, they're all going to want to know you more, how we can get a hold of you and the school and anything you'd like to say at that point so we can share it.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, I'm at, IWP.edu, Institute of World Politics, where I'm the dean, and doing a lot with course development now. We're trying to figure out ways to give people access to our courses who maybe aren't at our school, like through distance learning or through like non-credit things, and just trying to share what we're doing. So we'll be working on more of those initiatives in the near future. I write a lot for the American Spectator. You can usually find my work there. Or, I mean, if you just send me an email, I can put you on my mailing list, or we can get you on the school's mailing list. There are a lot of ways to stay in touch, and I'm happy to always hear from people, and it's great to be on your show. Always a pleasure. I enjoy it very much.
Just, nice to have
you know, a nice sort of free speech zone where we can just kick around ideas, and you don't have to jam everything into a talking point. We can just kind of explore stuff. It's great to have the time and to be with such great people. So I always appreciate it, Joe.
Well, it's great. If it works out, you can be with us next week. That's great. If it does, we got you down. But if you can't, you might not be. I hope you can. But if you can't, we'll do something else.
I don't know what more I'll have to say next week.
Okay, you guys can argue about that later, but I have a question, Jim. So your newsletter, does it have some of your written your articles and stuff, or what's in your newsletter?
Oh yeah, it has all kinds of things, goings on at the school, some like current event stuff. They always send out what I write as well, and then other faculty members, because we have a fantastic faculty, all great people, all signed on to our charter. All of them are former government in some way, so they've actually done things. That's part of our scholar practitioner model, where we actually have the professors who've done stuff teach the students instead of it's all theory. And we think that gives a much better outcome. So yeah, the newsletter is very informative about all the goings on at the school.
Let's all get on it. Let's all get on that. We will. And I know
I'm going to right now.
There you go. Thanks, Steph. She covers all this stuff so well. Way to go. Jim, if it works for next week, hey, we're on. I know people are going to, Ron, others missed you, and a lot of people are going to be coming back. If you have a question or something, lay back with a cup of coffee. That would be great. So, okay, good. Hey, guys, you heard it from the man himself. Next week, we'll be back in touch. Ladies and gentlemen, we just love and appreciate all of you. You're a blessing to us. We never, ever take it for granted that you're part of the Raising Expectations family. And just remember, our speaker tonight, let's pray for him each day, lift him up in his family. Can we say this? His daughter just had a great junior high graduation. We love sharing about our families, everybody. So it's a fantastic thing. Yeah, fantastic. So we'll be back with you next week, same time, same station. And Ron's not here, so we don't have our regular ending. Normally we end to sing the song Happy Trails to You from Roy Rogers, but he'll be back to sing it next week as we go out. God bless you, Jim, and we'll look forward to next week. Thanks so much, and you have a blessed and a great week, and I hope your family and everybody has a great time and a little bit of a rest in the summertime with you. Okay. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
Anything
you, Jim.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Jim. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.